As a traveler, it's a fact you're going to need to manage your spending in different currencies. You need a service that not only helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, but also does it without the hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This is where Wise comes in. Wise is the easiest way to connect all of your finances internationally. I've been a customer for over a decade. It's been a lifesaver for me as a traveler, a nomad, and now a permanent resident abroad. If you're a traveler who's still using your regular bank, you need to check this out. Join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account could work for you by downloading the app or visiting wise.com/travel. That's wise.com/travel. Thank you to Wise for supporting today's show. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Usually people would think that it's too expensive to travel, but the only way you can find out is actually sitting down, seeing your expenses, what can you cut, what you can't, and so forth. So having that a light discussion really helped us to like see whether it's possible or not. And then the other thing is like you can't have it all, right? So you have to understand what you can trade off.
As we continue the Choosing a Life of Travel theme week here on the show, that was Mignot Lezhnev discussing some of the practicalities around making that transition to travel we love to talk about here on the Zero to Travel podcast in this episode. She's also joined by her husband, Sasha. They share a behind-the-scenes look at what it took for them to take a career break to travel as a family full-time with their 5-year-old and share plenty of advice along the way for anyone else listening here today looking to do the same. Plus, their top 10 hidden gems in East Africa. You won't want to miss this. Among other things, you'll discover where to go to have the ideal safari experience, a standout Ethiopian destination that you won't see on any other top 10 lists, an incredible and affordable place to experience gorilla trekking, 2 African cities worth spending time in, and much more. It's all happening in this show right now. So buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here, and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, it's Jason here with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. Did you know the capital and largest city in Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, means new flower? Which I thought was symbolic of this week's theme, choosing a life of travel. New flowers bring new beauty and new life. And at any point in time, we have that opportunity to reinvent ourselves, to become new flowers. It's always an exciting thought. Our guests today, Sasha and Mignot Lezhnev, have spent a lot of time in East Africa. Mignot is from Ethiopia, and Sasha lived in Uganda, where he started a nonprofit that helped reintegrate over 2,500 former child soldiers. That's called the Grassroots Reconciliation Group. We talk about that today. Very interesting work. You also, of course, hear, as I mentioned, how they made the leap to full-time travel, an incredible list of destinations, and much more. One last thing, don't forget, if you want to sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter, I know it's tough to keep track of a lot of these destinations mentioned in these episodes, so I'll be sure to send out that list when the show goes out to the newsletter, so you can have that there. And stick around on the back end after the interview if you'd like. I am going to give a shout out to a listener who is turning lemons into travel lemonade. And I'll also leave you with 2 wise sayings, Ethiopian sayings, one of which reminds me of some of the late nights I've had out on the road. Stick around for that if you'd like. Without further ado, here's the conversation with Sasha and Mignot. I will see you on the other side, my friend. Thanks for listening. Sasha and Mignot Lezhnev, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friends.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
What an honor to chat with you guys. And there's a lot to talk about. I know we're going to do the top 10 hidden gems in East Africa, and you guys brought a whole list, and you've spent a lot of time in this region of the world. So, well, maybe we can start there. Why don't you explain your connection? I know you, one of you grew up there, so.
Yes, I am originally from Ethiopia. I was born and raised there before I moved to US about 21 years ago for higher education. So the connection, you know, is because I was born and raised in Ethiopia and I still have a family. So I go back and forth. Secondly, I also work in Africa, related to Africa, and work in sub-Saharan Africa for education policy. So that's my connection with Africa. Yeah.
Yeah. And we did not meet in Africa, but I was dating once some, you know, whatever, millennia ago, and put it on my on my list that I definitely wanted to be in a relationship long term with somebody who had Africa in their heart, was dedicated or from or somehow really really into Africa. So I lived in Uganda for 3 years. My whole field is human rights in Africa. I was there doing conflict resolution work. I ended up starting a nonprofit there and traveled kind of throughout the region. So I got to know the region really well. Love it. I still go back pretty frequently. We're going for Christmas too. So we'll be over there again.
Cool. Where did you guys meet? Can you tell us the meeting story?
the short end of it is we met at a beer garden.
Okay.
The first date was supposed to be a coffee shop, and the coffee shop closed within like 10 minutes or something. So like the only place nearby was a beer garden. And she doesn't drink beer, haha.
Right.
So we met in Washington, D.C. Yes.
I guess working in the same sort of fields in a way. Connection there.
Yeah. We were both working on Africa. I was working on sort of human rights stuff. Mignot was doing education stuff. DC is such a melting pot for people working, you know, internationally. So we met online. We met on match.com, and Mignot was on like a free weekend. Thankfully I got her, cause she didn't even pay for like messages. She could only message me that one weekend. but it worked out. I mean, you know,
who had to talk who into doing the nomad thing?
No, I think, we both wanted, we're really passionate about, travel, and, we have met other travelers in our, small vacation that we took here and there. So we started the conversation and landed on your actually podcast and started listening to your podcast over and over again. And I remember making a decision, was after one of your podcasts. So we're like, why can't we be one of those people? But it was a long process. It was a long conversation. It didn't happen overnight, obviously. And then of course the COVID happened, and that pushed us a little bit to that, making a decision quickly. Yeah,
it was interesting. So you're from Philly, right, Jason?
Yeah.
So do you ever go? Have you ever been to Assateague Island, like on the eastern shore there?
Is that where the horses run wild?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I've never been there, but I've always wanted to go.
Well, there you go. You've traveled around the world, but you missed the greatest hidden gem of the East Coast.
Dang.
it was 2020. We needed a break from, you know, hanging out at our home, like for whatever, 90 days straight. So we did a little camping trip, and you could camp on the beach there for whatever, $20 a night. And they're usually pretty enough spots available. I don't know how we found your podcast. It's an interesting question. Do you remember?
No.
Somehow, maybe somebody had mentioned, I don't know. Anyway, so we were like listening to it's a 3-hour drive out there, and we saw a bunch of RVs as we're driving. And it was some some couple you had on who was doing art on the road. I can't remember the name, their names. In fact, I don't remember the names of hardly any of your guests unless I've connected with them. And but they were great. And we were like, wow, these people are doing art on the road. And they're surviving. They're generating some income enough to survive. And then we saw all these RVs. We're like, wait a minute, maybe there's something we can do there. So we found this RV called Lazy Days. That's literally the brand. And so we're like, God, that's a sign. We got to get one. So we did.
Talk about some killer branding. That's some great branding.
I know.
So you bought an RV.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we bought the Lazy Days. Yeah.
Yeah. Was the RV decision because I know you guys are traveling with a child. So, you know, that's nice to have your own space, I guess. Was that the driver for that mode of transport, that decision?
Yeah. And then we were thinking it was during COVID, right? So we couldn't go any other place. And lastly, it's because we were thinking of a year of travel, slow travel. So that's the decision because we already knew that we wanted to leave our jobs and just travel at least minimum for a year. That ended up being 2 years, but yeah.
Yeah, and we'd been to like a bunch of countries outside the U.S. and we wanted to do more domestic travel. And, you know, during COVID, that just seemed like a great combination. For my birthday every year, which is around Labor Day weekend, like early September, we always go hiking out west. So we, you know, been to Olympic, we did some ice climbing on Mount Hood, we did Yellowstone. I took Minya for her first camping trip a long time ago. In Yellowstone, we were like holding our bear canisters at night. It's pretty hilarious. And so we're just like, yeah, we want to go to all those places that we haven't been yet and let the kiddo explore. We were paying all this exorbitant money in childcare for preschool here. So we're like, let's dump that cost and buy an RV instead.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's brings up a point. I call these substitution costs there. Well, there's costs that you would have if you were on the road anyway, right? Like you're going to buy food, whether you're traveling and buying food or you're at home buying food. So that's like a wash, right? And then if you go nomadic, like you guys have, like you mentioned, the childcare is a great example. If you're paying multiple thousands of dollars a month, well, now you don't have to pay that. That just goes right into your travel budget or towards your RV or whatever. I know that's obvious, but I think it's worth pointing out because when you start kind of thinking that way, travel first, I feel like you start to see your things you're spending money on and the lifestyle a bit differently, I feel. Well, Mignot, you mentioned kind of the struggle, some of the struggles of, you know, you said it didn't happen overnight, I think was the words that you used as far as the journey to long-term travel. I have some questions about your work and stuff too, and then we're going to get into this list, but I just wanted to hear a bit of your advice around the transition to travel, which is a popular topic here, because that is never a clear-cut kind of thing. It sounds like you guys are both on the same page, and another couple, sometimes it's not the case, and then there's decisions to make, and I'm sure a lot of things happening, and then there's the emotions around leaving your job and all that kind of stuff. I just wanted to hear a bit more about your experience with that whole process.
Yeah, definitely. So for us, we were a bit of adventurous in a way. Long ago, we discussed about travel and we wanted to do the Silk Road. We mapped it out and the costs of it. And then at that time, we were just, you know, not new, but like we were working toward going up the ladder in our perspective jobs, but at that time it didn't make sense for us to do that. So the challenges are like, I think the hardest part people have or that we faced is there's never a perfect time to make a decision. So instead of waiting for a perfect time, just think of it like, okay, usually people would think that it's too expensive to travel, but the only way you can find out is actually sitting down, seeing your expenses, what can you cut, what you can't, and so forth. So having that a light discussion really helped us to like see whether it's possible or not. And then the other thing is like you can't have it all, right? So you have to understand what you can trade off, like, and then what brings you more happiness than like owning a house, a car, or whatever the case may be. And for us at that time, we have stayed in our position or in our prospective work for a very long time. So it made it, it makes it easier for us to like, okay, to have a break and see what's out there. And then personally for me, I went back to the same job that I left because I really enjoyed it. I like working with the people and the cause. So I just went back. But having those decisions, having a discussion, an honest discussion, and sometimes also explaining some of the fears that I had before we started really helped me, talking with Sasha, because you know, I haven't seen most African Americans traveling throughout the country, so like it was a bit of a consideration for me, like going out way in the West was a bit of a challenge in my mind, right? It's all related to fear. Right. Until you try it, you don't know. So all the expectation or the worries that I have, once we took a leap of faith, I realized like it was just in my head, not necessarily that things would happen. And people are people. I actually found it to really appreciate that everyone is nice as long as you're nice to them too. That's one of the things that I realized. I'll say, okay, why am I worrying too much? But that really helped having an open conversation and making sure that we're both comfortable before we made the decision together. So, yeah.
Just to add to what she said, a couple things. Number one is we kind of sat down and thought about what are the things that have made us the happiest over the past, you know, whatever, 7 years of marriage or 9 years of relationship that we had. And almost all of them related to great travel experiences, especially outdoors, hiking or mountain climbing, or we have a lot of failed mountain climbing stories, which we can get into. Even those were, you know, basically our best experiences. And yet we were sort of, spending actually most of our time just being stressed out at our jobs. And we were both pretty passionate about our jobs. You know, I was doing human rights investigations in Africa, and Mignot was helping on education in Africa, but we just done them for quite a long time. And so we're like, well, you know, can we take a little sabbatical? And we put a time cap on it. I think that was important. And then we sat down with an Excel sheet, which was like probably the trigger was like, wait a minute, we can actually do this. For our budget was $36,000 for the year for the whole family, not including the cost of the RV, because we'd sell the RV for more or less what we got it for, which is what we're about to do. But and we'd probably sell it for even more than we got it for. At least that's the but basically, like, let's just, you know, dive deeper into those happy experiences. And that's kind of what we did. And then you realize, like, I mean, which is what many of your guests say too, is like, you know, there's travel fatigue. You're not going to have these absolutely amazing experiences every single day. You need downtime. Like, we watched a bunch of Netflix shows in the back of our RV, because it's like, you know, you have to have your downtime too. But nonetheless, like, we were able to have these wonderful experiences. Now it seems almost like, did I actually do this? Because now we're back home. we're very grateful that we did.
Yeah, you're in like did that just happen? Like, was that a dream? It's interesting to hear that the practical exercises you guys mentioned, like the Excel sheet and going through the budget and stuff like that, was actually the thing that made it real. I think that's the thing that's the easiest to put off, right? Because you have the dreaming thing. Oh, that's fun. I can go here. Look at this guidebook. Do that. But it's actually doing the practical stuff that gives you the momentum to fulfill the dream, I feel. I've heard that quite a bit as like a theme in this show. So you weren't working. This was essentially a sabbatical. Like you said, you were totally free, right? So that must have been a wonderful gift for you guys as a family, the three of you. And also for yourselves, to give you a chance to, I'm sure, process some of the career stuff and life stuff and things like that. How was the time away you know, even just outside of the travel, but just the sort of the bubble of time you gave yourself to have time together as a family and things like that. How has that impacted you in your lives?
I think it's, as you said, it's an incredible experience that we have, especially to see our child, you know, in front of us growing.
Spending all this time together, right?
Yes, yes. That was, you know, at the end of the day, we always practice gratitude. And that was our gratitude, saying like spending time and seeing him explore. I think that helped us now, you know, coming back. We always try to make time to go outside, even if it's at the end of the day, that connection within our family to explore and be in nature is one of our relaxing family activities every day, even now. So that kind of helped us in a way to see the light.
I would say for me, I was pretty stressed out. He was doing a great, you know, good work, but pretty stressed out doing it, I guess. I think both years, because the next year we tried to make it sustainable. We were working on the road, so we did another year on the road from an idea, based on an idea that we heard from your show. Actually, somebody did a month at a time in some of their favorite places or places they wanted to live. So that's what we did for the second year. After we ran out of money. But both years, I would say that, has helped me become like a much more patient person. I was the homeschool dad, for the second year and spending all that time, you know, in the mornings with my kid, reading to him and all that. And just, you know, realizing that like life is not going to end if this little thing doesn't happen. I need to blow up, you know, all those things. So that's really helped. And I think those things are carrying forward now. I think also, you know, strangely enough, valuing our friendships more. It was interesting, you know, you go on travel, you see all these amazing places and no one talks about the people. But actually, as it turns out, like the people is maybe either the most important or the, you know, equally important to the places you're seeing. And so we were able to see friends who had moved away on the road and really reconnect with them, but also really valuing our friendships here now. I think we're really investing. We feel like we're investing back in our old friendships and really spending quality time with people where I don't think we valued that as much before. We saw people, but it was always like, oh, what's the next thing? What are you doing? You know, am I competing with somebody? And now it's like, you're really trying to soak up that time. I feel a bit different that way after a couple of years of travel.
Almost like the rhythm of life has been slowed down in a way.
Yeah, I think in a way, like we are trying to be mindful to live in the present, not like thinking what's out there, what do we need to do, but like making sure whoever we're connecting be very meaningful in a way to really connect and deepen our friendship, even family members and stuff like that. Yeah.
Do you feel that way when you go back to Philly? Or I don't know if you have a lot of people back in Philly anymore.
No, it's been a while, but yeah, I think travel makes you appreciate your home base too. So that's another one of those. I mean, or it makes you realize you shouldn't live there. Right? Either way, it leads to something.
We're going to do it again though.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off the beaten path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan
Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries, plus it's the best-reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something, and it makes an incredible gift. Under 50 bucks. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Now, back to the show. I mean, I've never talked to an expert on crafting peace strategies to deal with warlords in collapsing states. I never talked to an expert on dealing with warlords. Some of your work, Sasha, has been pretty interesting in terms of the work that you're doing around former, you can talk a bit about it. I mean, the former child soldiers and refugees. I read the story of Betty really quickly on the website for the grassrootsgroup.org. And that was, I mean, I just burst out into tears immediately. I'm just like, this is, and I'm only getting the summary of her life, you know, in a couple paragraphs, and that was enough to send me over the edge. So, and both of you can share a bit more, because it's easy to gloss over like the, well, you know, we're stressed out at work and all this stuff, and, you know, we're taking this break. But I just wanted to get into a bit more of the specifics of the intensity of the job and some of the joys and some of the intense things about it. And maybe you both can share a bit more about what you've been doing. And yeah, just curious to hear more.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for asking, Jason. I appreciate it. Well, you know, my journey in Africa started in 2000. I went to Ghana to help build a school as one of these volunteer programs. I had a sort of a near-death experience with it. I got some really bad stomach bug and ended up to get hospitalized, and the electricity went out in the hospital, and they were going to operate, and it was a whole big mess that I ended up. Yeah. It was pretty, wow. Pretty crazy. Yeah.
How old were you?
I guess 20. Yeah. Okay. It was quite an experience. And, I remember, you know, getting out of there. Finally, I spent a week in the hospital. And I kissed the ground when I came back to the U.S. I was so happy to be back. And I think, you know, your life can kind of go in two different directions after that. You're like, oh, I'm going to be super cautious and never go back. Just, you know, that's a crazy place. But actually, like, I kind of dedicated a lot of my life to helping things in Africa after that. So then I moved after that. I sort of really got into conflict resolution, studying, and then I moved to Uganda. It was supposed to be for a year, ended up to be almost 3. And, you know, once you hear the stories of people who've been affected by conflict or poverty or, you know, exploitation, you can't get those things out of your head. I think it's just within us that you feel like you got to do something about it. And so I tried little things. I did a little fundraising thing, like help refugees. And so you raised, you know, whatever, $500, and I knew some local people we could give it to. But being there, interviewing all these people, working with them through, I was part of a little aid project, basically. You know, I sort of a friend of mine and I, we came together and we realized we could do something concrete. And so we started this project. It was within a bigger aid organization. And then we founded this nonprofit on our own. It's called Grassroots Reconciliation Group. And we did that 16 years ago, and it's still going, basically with the idea that these former child soldiers, once they're abducted, a lot of them escape, and then they come back home, and you think, oh, the community is going to help them. But it's actually the opposite, that they're stigmatized, and obviously they have a lot of trauma. They're forced to, you know, kill people or do all kinds of things. And so when they come back home, they have all these issues. And so, you know, we set up programs to work with them in their home communities, like so that they can do joint projects with the host community. So they do farming projects, brick making projects, trauma counseling projects. And like the woman you mentioned, Betty, is somebody who I met last year. We were visiting Mignot's family in Ethiopia, and I took a little quick trip over to Uganda. And like many people, she said, you know, yeah, I was on the verge of suicide. Like my community had rejected me. I'd been raped many, many times by somebody who I was forced, to be a so-called wife of a rebel commander. And you know, you guys brought me out of my house. Now I'm like a counsel other people who are going through these similar issues. I have a little income from this project. And so, yeah, we've helped about 2,500 people like that. You know, it's a small project, but a way to contribute to peace out there. And my career more generally has kind of been focused on peace building and, you know, helping, try to come up with different ways of crafting peace. As you said, I wrote a book, about 15 years ago on this subject. It was kind of based on Sierra Leone and Tajikistan. I went to Sierra Leone. I couldn't get to Tajikistan. They didn't give me a visa, but, you know, the fact that that there are actually solutions to conflicts where there's warlords. So I was at the time working on Somalia and was like, this seems so intractable. Are there places that we can look to for lessons? And in fact, there are. And Sierra Leone was resolved. Tajikistan is peaceful as well. We started this new website. Sierra Leone is like one of the hidden gems of Africa that we list, because it's actually now a tourist destination or becoming one. So
yeah, the book I highlighted some of the summary because I was surprised to see that you wrote a whole book on this topic because it's nothing I'm familiar with. But as you said, Crafting Peace presents a new way of looking at eliminating warlords and restoring peace in war-torn states. That will prove essential to both scholars and practitioners in international relations and political science. I just thought it was really cool to dig into this a bit because you hear people talk about, you know, trying to come up with ways that we can create peace among nations or among warring factions or whatever the case is. And now you're hearing like a concrete example of how somebody is doing that. And I just thought that was really interesting.
Thanks. I would just add to that. You had a great guest on recently who was who had been living in Sudan. I think I had to flee. I think her name was Jacqueline or Jackie. Yeah. And that was a great podcast. And this same problem is happening in Sudan now, and other countries. But I think one of the biggest ways that can be impacted is through the cutting off of the finances. These people are making money off of the human rights abuses. They'll sell. So in Sudan, some of the biggest warlords, like in Sierra Leone, they sold diamonds. So they're selling gold. So I've done a lot of work on this whole issue of blood gold, conflict gold, and that gold reaches us. And there are ways to have an impact on that. So I still consult for my old job. I'm not on it full time. But that's one of the things that we do is to try to help cut off the finances of some of these warlords. It's called the Sentry. Our co-founder is some actor you may have heard of with the name George Clooney. So,
okay. Yeah. Mignot, I wanted to hear a bit more about your relationship with your job because you mentioned going back after a year. What kind of realizations did you come to from being away? And, you know, I know there's people out there listening that consider a break and the value of a break. And I'm just curious in your experience how that impacted your career.
So for me, you know, one thing you have to realize is like leaving something doesn't necessarily mean like it's the end of it. It's not like a divorce. You know, it's a sector that I've always been passionate about, is education. And I have seen like how it has transformed my father's life. He was from a very small village where there was only a primary school, and he has to go to another city to in order for him to go to, you know, higher education, stuff like that. So I've always been passionate. I always know that, you know, by giving an opportunity for kids to learn how to read, we have done our part in a way. So I work with the international development here that focuses on education. Part of my job is education, but of course we humanitarian, we provide humanitarian assistance as well. So coming back for me, I realized, of course, I could have applied for many other jobs, but, you know, I just realized I really enjoyed what I'm working on, and I wanted to continue to provide support in a way to Sub-Saharan Africa, and that has always been my sector, and that's what I've focused for the past 12 years. So it gave me an appreciation even more, realizing like, although I have other opportunities, I still wanted to go back and contribute and doing what I do, among others. Yeah.
You guys have done so much good stuff. Basically talking to two angels here.
No, not at all.
No, it's pretty normal in DC, man. This is we live the normal DC life.
Well, I know when we were talking, you guys mentioned doing this gratitude thing at dinner. I said, oh, we do the same thing. We try to say things we're grateful for. And if you're listening to this, you could just hearing some of the stories and, you know, things that are going on in the world. It's just a reminder of like how lucky we are. And when my daughter's complaining about going to school, I'm like, do you know there's kids that would just, they would just do anything to be able to go to school and learn? And, you know, I give her like the parental guilt trip, but you know. Got to do it.
By the way, that is something we picked up from your show again. So I guess both of us, both of our families do this every dinner. We sit around. I don't know how many examples you guys give. We try to do three each. And our son is always the first to raise his hand. Okay. Who wants to say what they're grateful for today? And he's always like, yes, me first. So hopefully that will be
that's nice.
Ingrained.
Oh, good. Yeah. Lately, my kids are just saying they're grateful for their stuffed animal, their favorite stuffed animal. I'm just like, this is beginning to be a lazy answer. Like, we're going to have to start digging deeper a little bit here.
Our kid usually says, I'm grateful for the cows who gave us the milk.
Nice. Yeah. I mean,
so now he's no longer allowed to say cows.
Cows are forbidden. Okay. You guys started offthebeatentravel.com. Right. So the idea there is to sort of curate these hidden gems from a community, if I'm reading it correctly. I know you do photography as well, Sasha. Are you all in on this type of stuff, or I'm not really sure. Yeah. Just business wise, what you're up to.
Yeah. So, I mean, I do three things right now. I consult for my old job. I run the nonprofit you mentioned, Grassroots Reconciliation Group. And then I'm doing this. I started this new website. I'm trying to focus, I should say, on this as a new venture, as an entrepreneur, for now, and we'll see where it goes. But the concept is, basically turning what we love to do, into some sort of a possible, business. So, you know, we love finding hidden gems everywhere we go, whether it's a city or a park, you know, or a random place, and finding, you know, the hidden gems out there. So the concept is kind of basically similar to Atlas Obscura. And I know you've had the Atlas Obscura folks on, but not for obscure things, for things that are kind of, you know, a little bit off the beaten track. So whether, you know, like I have a hidden gems Paris in there. Paris is obviously not a hidden gem, but there are hidden gems within Paris. So things that are kind of, you know, I think you've said it on the show, even getting off the main street can be a hidden gem if you're looking for a restaurant or something like that. Or maybe a whole region is a hidden gem, like Central Asia, I think is a sort of a hidden gem region. So that's, you know, and we're having guest bloggers. That's the kind of the point. It's supposed to be a hub, right? So like I have about 25 blogs in the hopper. We started with 11, and we're having guest blogs from all over the place, and we'd welcome guest blogs from all over the place. So the first one was on Uzbekistan. We have Abu Dhabi hidden gems coming tomorrow. Hidden gem locations within Southeast Asia. I have somebody doing an Antarctica blog. Obviously, I don't think there are any hidden gems in Antarctica, but you know, ways to visit Antarctica in a non-traditional way, something like that. So, so that's the concept. So, yeah, I mean, we're just starting out, but we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, well, we'll link to all that in the show notes. And I know you guys just hit 44 states, 34 national parks in an RV, and then you were living a month in each of your favorite spots. You know, all that being said, though, we were kind of back and forth like, what should we do? Where should we focus the hidden gems on? And since we haven't done a ton of content in Africa in terms of destinations, I thought, well, this would be a good opportunity because you guys are, you know, you've spent a lot of time there and you've been traveling a lot and you've had the real authentic experiences all over the place. So you mentioned this list focusing primarily on Ethiopia, Uganda, Zanzibar, and hidden gems in Nairobi as well. Is that correct? Should we dive in? I was hoping this is like a countdown 10 to 1. Is this like this is the number one hidden gem? Is it like that? Or is it just sort of...
You got it, man. We've okay, listened to cool. enough of your shows to know the countdown. So we're ready to rock and roll.
All right, let's get into it. Give us your number 10. Was it fun putting together the list? I mean, these lists are a blast, I think.
Absolutely. This is our favorite and home sort of pseudo home region. So,
okay,
right, you want to start?
Let's hear it.
Okay, so our first pick is Denakul. It's the lowest portion of Ethiopia. It is actually it's like 100 meters lower than the sea level. It's in the northern part of Ethiopia, closer to the Eritrea border and the Afar region. Growing up from Ethiopia, I didn't know that, you know, I learned about it, but I completely forgot it existed. And it was not available because of, you know, roads were not available then. And flights were very limited at that time. So we had an opportunity to go together and come to find out it felt like going to, I would say, Mars because it was just a great an experience to see the volcano at one point, and then you go to the salt lake, and then getting to see the culture, the Afar culture is also completely different in a way from part of the Ethiopian culture. So we had a bit of experience looking at all those angles, but I don't know if you wanted to add as a...
Yeah, I mean, for the thing that is really striking for me about this region is it's the closest you can get to like an active volcano in the world. It's pretty amazing. We're sort of volcano junkies. You're a travel junkie, Jason. We're volcano junkies. So this was the coolest one. I mean, my profile picture on Instagram is me standing in front of this volcano, and you're literally like 20 feet away, and you go kind of at dusk, and then you get there, and you see as the sun sets, it becomes this orange, this magical orange glow, and you see the bubbles. And like we were recently in Hawaii, and we saw Kilauea volcano erupting, and that's cool, but you're almost a mile away, or I don't know, half a mile. It's really far. But this one is literally in your face. In fact, I was walking around and almost fell in. So, yeah. Well,
oh, gosh. Okay. Don't fall into a volcano, please.
Exactly.
Don't
fall into a volcano.
But yeah, it's a pretty amazing experience. So, obviously, things awesome. In Ethiopia are a little unstable at the moment. So, when we published our article, you could go there, but it's a changing situation. So, you know, check the local conditions before you go. But
we'll get back to the interview in just a moment.
Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning, and you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, Jason here. Did you know we have a free weekly newsletter over at zerototravel.com/newsletter? I put my heart and soul into this newsletter and love keeping in touch with listeners off the podcast. That's where you can find out about all of the latest and greatest events, trips we're planning, and of course, you're going to get money-saving travel tips, destination advice, all kinds of stuff to provide value and help you add more travel into your life. So why not sign up? Again, totally free, no cost at all. zerototravel.com/newsletter. Excited to welcome you into that community. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. Number nine.
Okay, so number nine is the east and south of Zanzibar. When I lived,
take us there. What are we finding? Take us there.
Yeah. So when I lived in Uganda, Zanzibar was the coolest place you could go on vacation. So I went 3 times. Minyo went as well. Zanzibar is part of Tanzania, so it is on the Indian Ocean, the east coast of Africa. It's a fascinating island. It's got this amazing, unique culture. It's Swahili culture, which is Arab and African cultures mixed. It was actually colonized by the Omani Sultanate some many years ago. And Zanzibar is I'm going to focus on the east and south, where you have these super long, some hidden, some not so hidden beaches. But really, really like that watercolor that you see in the TV ads, basically. And you can go out and swim for, I don't know, like a mile maybe, or half a mile, something like that, without getting any sort of a wave. There's this phenomenal place where I took my mom, where they had no air conditioning, but the best sushi of your life is a Japanese lady who married a Zanzibari and runs this place called Paradise Beach Bungalows. And I think we paid like, I don't know, $30 a night or something to stay. But they'll literally come to your breakfast table and they say, what's your favorite fish? What do you want to have for dinner? And we're like, this. And so, okay, great. We'll catch it. We'll go and catch it tonight and we'll fix sushi from it. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. It's absolutely incredible. And there's all kinds of other things, like, you know, you sit in the beach and like you get your little henna tattoo, you can rent a bike. Like it's very chill and relaxed. And some of the east, it's about, I think, 2 hours or so from Stone Town, is becoming a little bit crowded. So the south of Zanzibar is kind of the new hidden gem out there, where the beaches are like, you know, the hidden gem beaches. So,
okay, cool. Giving people plenty of fodder for their bucket lists or their live lists or whatever you want to call it. You know, the handful of times I went fishing, I can tell you I couldn't pick the fish I caught. I could only just hope that I caught one. So that's exactly. Pretty incredible. That's epic. All right, number eight.
Okay, number eight. So I'm going to do this one and Minyo's going to do the next one. So the next one is let's move over to Uganda. Uganda's still in East Africa. It's landlocked. So there are beaches, but they're on Lake Victoria. So, and you probably shouldn't swim in them because of this worm. But anyways, there's a great place that I actually never went to when I lived in Uganda. It took me like visiting for the 10th time after I moved back to actually go there. It is one of the few places in the world where you can walk around in the wild with white rhinos. It's called the Ziwa Rhino Sanctuary. And so rhinos are obviously very endangered. They can't keep them out in complete wild, otherwise poachers will get them. But this is kind of as wild as you can get. And so there are people that go and track them within this pretty big sanctuary, but it's not in a national park, and it's pretty, you know, off the beaten track, so to speak. Like, it's not super close to anything. But it is a really cool place to go, and then you go walk around with them. And there was a rhino fight when we were there, and so the guy's like, okay, just get right next to the tree, because apparently they have really bad eyesight. And so these rhinos will charge, but if they're charging, like, they don't distinguish you from the tree, and they're not going to hit the tree. So you just back up along the tree. But it's a really, really cool place.
Just stand behind this tree. You'll be fine.
I think it's like $40 or something. It's a really awesome experience. Ziwa Rhino Sanctuary in northern Uganda. So
incredible. All right. Number 7.
So we were discussing when we were coming up with this list. You know, many people, when they're thinking of Africa, they were thinking of safari and like, oh, let's just go to safari. But we start appreciating cities as well. You know, we have the tendency whenever we travel back to Ethiopia to see my family, we'll just see them and then explore the outside of the capital city. But there was time that I think because of the insecurity at that time, we ended up staying in Addis the entire time that we were there, and then start exploring. And for the first time, we had a greater appreciation for the city because it shows a different culture. We didn't know there was a huge jazz scene in Addis. So we were very big on jazz. So we explore those. The food scenery is just amazing. Of course, you know, injera is our traditional food, but beyond that, there are many, many cuisines that we were able to try. Also, there is what we call the alabar. It's almost a big garden, but it's not beer. It's like fermented, you know, alcohol. That's, I don't know if I should say beer, but it's something.
The local beer. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that scene also that we went and explore. And there are many parks right now in the city. So you could explore the newest park that Unity. We were very surprised to see, like, unfortunately, we realized, you know, trees have been removed because there is a huge expansion in the city. But they were also to secure greeneries for those parts. So those were really, really nice if you have a day or two in Addis to explore.
Yeah, amazing. All right, number 6.
Okay, number 6 is, I think when a lot of people go on safari, they have this image of, you know, them in the wild alone, you know, lions roaring. And seeing the animals being, you know, sort of going in this experience as if it were a National Geographic episode. And then when they actually get there, they're like 25 Land Cruisers around, you know, all these photographers, radios, video cameras. It's just, you know, completely different, right? You ever been on safari, Jason?
No.
Oh, well, okay. Well, I
would love to go.
Now I know why you wanted the Hidden Gems of East Africa list.
Yes. You got it.
All right, man. You have to tell me, you have to tell us which one was your favorite. But but this park is exactly that experience. So it's called Kidepo National Park in Uganda. It's in northeast Uganda in the Karamoja region. No one goes there. And they have all the animals, all the big 5 animals. There is a lodge. You can also sleep on tent platforms, and you actually hear the lions roaring at night. It is really that experience that I think everybody dreams of when going on safari. You can fly there, you can drive there. It's a remote area. It used to be completely insecure. I'm not guaranteeing anybody's security, but it's safe to go to. Plenty of people go there, now. It's just more remote, So you have to spend some more time going there, but you know, it's one of those places that's absolutely worth it. So, you have your picnic out in the bush, so to speak. It's really that real nature experience with the animals and the, you know, giraffes, lions, etc. Like they're still pretty wild out there. So
sign me up. That sounds perfect. I'll go into the tents. I want to hear the lions roaring. Okay. Number five. Wow. That sounds like a number one to me. What's the number one going to be? Suspense is killing me. All right. Number five. We're almost halfway done.
Okay. So we're going to share this one. So we talked about Zanzibar, the beaches. So now Zanzibar town, they call it Stone Town, is our number five. So Zanzibar is really cool. It's this town. It's somewhat big, but you really get a sense of the culture. This Arab African Swahili culture there. You wander around these narrow streets. You can smell. So Zanzibar was famous for being like at the center of the spice trade, and so you can go on a spice tour. Actually, that was one of the coolest things. I went with my mom. And they'll, you know, like cloves, lemongrass, all these things that they got from East Asia and India and brought to Africa. And this was the place where they brought them. And so now they're growing them out there. You can smell the spices as you're walking through the streets. People light up the incense and that sort of thing. Zanzibar has the most incredible old doors also, these like ancient wooden doors. Like the coolest that I think we've ever seen. So I don't know.
I think for me, like, it's just that the Arab influence that they had and the spices is like, they have an open market where you see like hundreds and hundreds of spices and they're very colorful. And I remember it was a rainy day when I went there, but just walking in the street in the rain and just smelling that just brings back like this beautiful memory of like, culture, but then, you know, it's borrowed from somewhere else. So it was a really interesting town, and the majority of the people there are Muslim, so there's that culture too. So it was very interesting walking, like it feels like an old city and you're walking in 17th century.
And I would just add that I think the coolest hotel that I've ever stayed at, we hardly ever stay in hotels, we're like total Airbnb people, but this is the coolest hotel I think I've ever stayed in was in Zanzibar. It's called the Emerson Hotel. It's actually founded by a couple of Americans, and you stay in these rooms. Each one like feels like an old Zanzibari palace, and so you like one of them has it's like on the bow on the roof, and you have your like own private breakfast with this curtains and the wood and like the local spice smells, etc. There's these special keys, like master's keep keys. It's really cool. I'm not doing it justice. Sorry.
Okay. No, I mean, it sounds incredible. It's hard. You know, you're painting the picture well, trust me. All right. We got four more left. Number four.
Okay. So, as Mignot said, I think a lot of people go to Africa just to see animals. And we're talking about animals, but the cities are actually where so much is happening. And if you don't hit cities as well, you're really missing out on the culture. So Nairobi, Kenya, where a lot of people land and then, you know, basically go straight to the Masai Mara or Serengeti, is an amazing city. Some of the best coffee in the world is in Nairobi, and it's not just exported. They have great coffee shops. The Kenya National Theater is a place where you can see local dancing, culture, theater performances. There's actually a safari park if you're dying to see animals inside the city. I actually saw. I was there for a conference, and I took a taxi, a Toyota Corolla taxi, for a day. To go to the park, and there was a lion fight, and this taxi driver is like, we got to get out of here. I'm like, oh no, this is what I came for. And so I'm hanging out the window, and this one lion is coming down the hill to fight with another lion, and over a female, of course. And the taxi driver is literally trying to drive away as I'm like, you know, shooting out. It was wild. So you can see that there's some amazing restaurants and Kenyan music is awesome. It's this great sort of East African hip hop. And you got to go dancing in Nairobi. It's a lot of fun. It's very, very lively. I would come from Kampala where I lived in Uganda to go to Nairobi just to hang out and have fun. It's really lively. So.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. We're in those types of locations around the world, there's the tendency to just skip over the city and go right to the main attraction, let's call it. But that brings up a really good point to just check out the cities, even if you're not a city person, which I understand. I understand. Okay, we're in our top three. This is getting serious now.
Right, we're going back to Ethiopia.
Oh, okay. And then it will be... Harar is another old city in parts of Ethiopia. And the most interesting part about Harar is that it was founded in a very small area, like the town or the city, and is surrounded by walls. And then you have five entrances of a huge door to get into that small town. But of course, it has grown. So now... the inside of the wall is a Muslim, and then outside of the wall is, you know, other domination Christianity. So there's that history that you walk in through. Like you will see like a lot of mosques within the walled city. Some of them dated back to 10th century. And then there is this culture like where all the houses are like almost white. And then as soon as you walk into the house, like it's decorated with like beautiful, colorful rugs. And the wall is covered with beautiful, colorful baskets. So it's just like full of colors. Outside is white. And then you walk in and it's full of colors. And we just enjoyed being part of that. And then also there is this, I guess I would say it's a tourist attraction now, but it started a long time ago where you feed hyenas. So there's like hyenas will come like around the sunset and then you just feed them meat. And I was, Sasha was like, oh, I'll take a picture. You just feed it. So I had the opportunity to feed the hyena. So it was, and the people are very laid back and they're very generous. And if you're curious about their culture, they will welcome you into their house. So we had the opportunity to explore that.
Yeah, Harar is like if you look at sort of the TripAdvisor top 10 list of places to go in Ethiopia, Harar is not on it. And that's what makes it cool. Is almost nobody goes there. It's like this really old walled city. And these hyenas, I mean, I don't know if you know, hyenas kill lions, right? That's like the only predator for lions. And you can go feed them. Mignot actually fed, she's shy, she fed them like from her mouth. It's insane. These are wild hyenas. They just come in the city to eat. It's quite an experience. Harar is cool. Oh, and some of the best coffee in the world comes from Harar.
Yeah.
It's okay. Literally Harar origin coffee. So
how do you spell the name of the city?
Harar.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some people spell it Harrar. So
that sounds like a destination that's right up my alley. The way you guys painted the picture with that and the colors and the walls and everything. That's awesome. All right. We're down to the final two. Hard to believe.
Okay. So moving to animals again. So safaris are always cool, but the animal you need to see in East Africa is the gorilla, the mountain gorilla. You can see them in Uganda, Rwanda, or the Democratic Republic of Congo. I recommend Uganda, not only because I live there, but it is cheaper than Rwanda. It's stable. I would recommend Congo. I've been to Congo probably 15 times, but I go there for work and it's not always very stable. It's not very stable right now. But in southwestern Uganda, there are two places you can actually go and track the gorillas in the mountains where they live. I took my mom, back in the day. And you go with
your mom's quite the adventurous soul. It's like, everywhere we go, it's like, yeah, my mom was there. And
well, she's our inspiration, man. She's 85 now. And she trekked in Afghanistan back in the day. She's been all over Iran. Like, yeah, she's awesome. So, but yeah, so she went on this Uganda gorilla trip, and it's amazing. There are two different places. You can go to Bwindi Forest or Magahinga. I recommend Magahinga. It's a little bit more off the beaten track. Bwindi can be a bit more crowded. You go with some soldiers to protect against poachers. So these dudes with AK-47s follow you around. And you can get very, very close to the gorillas. Obviously, you don't want to touch them because we carry disease that they could catch, and so they could die. But it's cool. You really go, like, you know, crouching in the forest and through the mud, and it's an amazing
legit
experience.
Adventure. Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool. And there's some beautiful areas around. There's a lake, sort of a crater lake called Lake Bunyonyi, and you can get these dugout canoes and relax on the lake. It's beautiful. So,
amazing.
Yeah, that's
wow.
Seeing the gorillas. Okay.
So that's, in terms of gorilla trekking, that is the place to go, in your opinion.
If you're more adventurous, try Kahuzi Biega National Park in the Democratic Republic of Congo. There, it's not touristy, and it's definitely an adventure. And there's lots of other things to see in Congo. It's just not that stable, it's open.
Okay, cool. So we got an alternate for the super adventurous listening. Okay, number one. Ooh.
Okay. Drum roll. Okay. So if you liked Zanzibar, you will love Lamu. Lamu is an island in Kenya. It is on the Somali border. So a lot of people are too afraid to go there. It is secure. It's smaller than Zanzibar. It has these like amazing winding streets. Some of the best beaches you'll ever experience. You can go on boat rides with locals in something called a dhow. It's like these ships, or a ship is not the wrong word. It's a boat, it's a big sailboat, basically, which are awesome. You can stay in these places for not very expensive, and actually, like, they come with a local chef, so they'll cook you the local Swahili food, which is amazing. It's easy to get there. You can fly. The place to be is Shela. Or Shilla, depending on your pronunciation. So it's top dog, I think, for us. Yeah.
And less touristy than Mombasa, because a lot of people go to Mombasa, a lot of Africans, when they're thinking of an island in Kenya, they go to Mombasa side than Lamu, but Lamu is much more beautiful than Mombasa and less crowded, I would say. Yeah.
Epic list, you guys. Well done. I'm going to need you to send it to me because we'll make
Absolutely.
Sure that we get it sent out when I publish this episode. If you're listening to it now, it's published. I'll make sure to include it in the newsletter so you have it written out, but you also have heard it here. And of course, you guys should mention where everybody can find you and all the things. So, this is an opportunity to invite people to get in touch, I suppose. So
well,
how would you like them to do that?
I have a question for you. Are you considering a trip to Africa or East Africa? Just?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think the thing I want to do is the safari with my kids. That's the obvious thing, right? So there's definitely some inspiration here for that. I'll hit you up offline about that because maybe that's something we need to put together.
All right.
Sounds great. Happy to help. Yeah. So our website is www.offthebeatentravel.com. If you're interested in any hidden gems anywhere in the world, look it up, or submit your own if you think we missed some, or you know, have a guest blog. On Instagram, I'm active. Mignot hates social media, but I post her all the time. So I'm Sasha Traveler. So I'm also on LinkedIn, Sasha Lezhnev, you know, whatever your flavor. I'm email Sasha@offthebeatentravel.com. So, you know, even Jason responds so to my emails. So.
Stop it. Thank you so much. I mean, you guys, I appreciate you taking the time to kind of put together the list and you know, figure out this episode together. Would you provide a lot of value here, I think, for people that are looking for new destinations, which I think as travelers, we always are, right? Being able to hear a bit more about your story and hearing you guys, the background and how you met. And I have way more questions because you've been full-time travelers the last 2 years, but I'm going to respect your time. I'll let you go. And I'm going to say, let's do this again in person somewhere, perhaps on safari.
That would be amazing. Oh, I should say one more thing, Jason. We are starting to write a book about our travel and how to do the long-term travel thing. The going title is Travel More, Spend Less. So we're just starting this book writing process now, and you know, maybe a year from now we'll have a book. So
cool.
We'll have to talk to you again.
Yeah, well, keep me posted. Let's stay in touch, and it was such a pleasure to chat with you both. Thank you so much for listening to so many of the shows, for being a part of the listening community, and for now spending your time to come on and provide value back to the community. And I think that's the beautiful circular thing we have going on here. That's why I'm always inviting people to get in touch. So there's a friendly reminder there at the end too, for anybody listening, if they want to bring their own list or, you know, something, provide value to the community like you guys have done today. That's what this is all about. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's an honor, really. Yeah. I mean, thank you so much for having us, Jason. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Take care.
Take care.
There you have it. What a lovely couple. So great to chat with them. I know we're going to cross paths at some point, and I would love to do it in one of those destination recommendations they had. My goodness. Talk about some sweet hidden gems. I love these hidden gem shows, and I'm going to do more of them. I actually have one coming up on New Zealand here in a short bit, and this is going to become a new series, I think, here on the Zero to Travel podcast, Top 10 Hidden Gems. So if you are a destination expert on a particular place, or you just want to get in touch, say hello, share your story, anything, please reach out to me. You know where to find me. Jason@zerototravel.com is my email. I have a voicemail where you can leave a message easily by just clicking a link. And you can also, of course, sign up for the newsletter to stay in touch. Don't forget to do that. I will share this list that Sasha and Mignot shared today to the newsletter, so you can make sure nothing gets lost there. You can do that over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. Quick shout out to a listener, and her name is Madeline. She's from Australia, and she said, "Hi, Jason, I've been listening to you for a few years now. So good to listen to like-minded people. Travel makes me super excited. Funny, because I didn't really start traveling until I was 25, but now I want it to be my life. I love listening to your guests, and you seem like a decent human being." Well, thank you very much. She goes on to say, "I was in bands and worked in the film, television, and music industry for 7 years before I became a flight attendant. Haven't been overseas for 23 years. My father is German. We lived in Cologne till I was 3. When I became a flight attendant with a major Australian airline, I just kept thinking of new places to go. I've been flying for 31 years now, and my children, 25 and 22, have also done some amazing trips. So recently, my husband asked for a separation, and at 55, I just went, bugger it. What can I do for myself now? So this year has been pretty hard, but the positive is I can travel my butt off. I have a little rental in Melbourne, and I have bought a small, modest beach house in Coffs Harbour, and I wanted you to know that I'm doing a gap year in installments. Your guest, Jerry Suster, which is from a past episode, inspired me to do what I really wanted to do." And just goes on to share some of the amazing trips she's had with her daughter recently and some more kind words about the show. And it was just really nice to hear from her, and I just wanted to give her a shout out because that is not easy, right? We come across these things that happen in life. In this case, her husband asking for a separation. Hard time. But turning those lemons into travel lemonade and basically embracing the new situation and using it to fuel her travels inspires me. It's not an easy thing to do. It can be in a situation like this. You know, you can just be so sad. It's such so much to overcome. And you know, just embracing it and getting out there. And I'm like she said, it's hard, but I'm sure it's hard. But I just wanted to give her a shout out for owning it and going for her travel dreams. I think that's a lovely thing. So congratulations to her. Now, to wrap it up, I'll leave you with a couple wise sayings from Ethiopia, at least according to a website I found. I don't know who does SEO for some of these websites and how these get ranked at the top. This one was a collection of Ethiopian proverbs and wise sayings. So it's from duniamagazine.com. Hopefully they're accurate. I have no way to fact check this, but I liked these sayings and I pulled them out and I'm going to share them with you. The first one reminds me of some late nights in the hostel. And it is, a good conversation is better than a good bed. And think about that. I mean, that just gives me a nice montage of memories from my own travels. Late nights, having incredible conversations with other travelers, with locals, all over the place. And just kind of thinking, you know what? Like, the bed can wait. The bed can wait. This is a wonderful moment. I want to soak up every second of it. I like that one. And lastly, these wise words, the heart of a fool is in his mouth, and the mouth of the wise man is in his heart. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time for the last installment of Choosing a Life of Travel Week in the next episode. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of your day. Cheers. Peace and love to you.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.